The German Bundeswehr officials discussed the option of striking the Crimean Bridge with Taurus missiles. I saw you wrote on your website criticizing Robert Gates for his idea of attacking Crimea. I want to know what's your take on these new changes that we are witnessing right now.
It's getting very complicated and even more interesting than before. We have this intercepted conversation, which is authentic, between very high German Bundeswehr officials saying, well, let me not paraphrase, let me just read you a sentence or two from one of them. He was the air operations, one of the supervisors there. His name was Hochstetter, okay? And I don't have the original German, but this is a translation, okay? I want to add a bit of pragmatism. I've come to the conclusion that there are two interesting targets, the bridge to the east and the ammunition depots. Now, the Crimean bridge to the east is difficult to reach, but we can reach it. The Taurus can do it. And it can also strike the ammunition depots a little farther to the north. So considering all this, I have a question. Is our target the bridge or the military depots? Now, yesterday when it became known that the Russians had this intercepted conversation, I struggled to get the original German. I just wanted to evaluate whether it was authentic. Well, it's recognized by the Germans themselves as authentic now. They are doing an inquiry. My God. Well, the Russians have said, yeah, please look at that and see what that really means here. Here's the president of France saying introduction of NATO troops should not be ruled out into Ukraine. And now we have this. And I think that the Russians are equally worried about some of the things being said by old Cold Warriors here in the United States. Cold Warriors who never have admitted their protestations that the Communist Party of the Soviet Union would never, ever, ever give up power peaceably, okay? Now, first and foremost, it's sort of like the last man standing. Brzezinski is dead. A lot of the other Cold Warriors are dead. But a fellow named Robert Gates, who we affectionately call Bobby Gates, when he worked with us in the Soviet Foreign Policy Branch, I actually was his boss for a while. I have to say, I was his boss for 2 years. But it's not my fault. It's not my fault. Oh my God. The guy has an unrestructured Cold Warrior. So why do I raise that? Well, all of a sudden, out of the blue, Bobby Gates comes to his best friend forever, David Ignatius, the Washington Post, who sings Bobby's praises up and down and says, you know, Bob Gates's dissertation to get his PhD at Georgetown is just an incredible work of art. Well, that was about 10 years ago. I went to the Georgetown University and read the thing. My God, I wouldn't give it a passing grade if it were I. I mean, it was pretty much plagiarized from all kinds of other sources. So anyhow, he's got this reputation. He's got this best friend forever. And what does Ignatius do? But he interviews him live for the Washington Post. Now, this seems to have happened on the 21st of February, maybe the 20th, because it appeared online on the 21st. Here's what Gates says. I mean, an intelligence analyst has to read all kinds of stuff, okay? All kinds of whatever, garbage. Not only what the Russians are saying, but what U.S. statesmen in quotes are saying. Here's Bobby Gates. One of my concerns has been that U.S. decision-making in providing the most advanced weapons to Ukraine has been deliberative, slow, and often too late. And now it's on pause. My God, you know, more pressure on the House Speaker to release that 60 billion with a B more. Okay, here's what he says. Okay, now we need to give Ukraine the ability to attack targets, for example, in Crimea. I mean, that's a no-brainer, says Gates. It's their territory. If they choose to attack targets, they're attacking targets inside Ukraine, that is, the Ukrainians, not targets inside Russia, no matter what Putin claims. Footnote little here, little footnote. Bobby Gates wrote his memoirs, and one of the things that he said was, it was never in my job jar to make the Russians feel happy. There you go, because I'm a tough guy. I think he had a sort of like the Truman little guy syndrome. Anyhow, that's beside the point. And you know, says Gates, if you want to give the Russians pause, if you want to interrupt their sense of momentum in Ukraine, at least he's acknowledging that from what I read, he says, the Russians are actually doing pretty well there. He says, you want to interrupt that sense of momentum, why not? Why don't you do things like drop the Kerch Strait Bridge? That would make a big impact on the Russians, I think, psychologically as well as militarily. Whoa! Now that's what the Bundeswehr officers were discussing, you know? They didn't say, I don't think the German says, drop the Kerch Strait Bridge, but that was one of the targets. Should we go after the bridge or should we go after the ammo depots? Okay. Now, the last thing I'd quote from Gates is what he imputes to what's in store here. The Russians, they want the southern coast up to and including Odessa. They want to change the government in Kiev. They want to put in a pro-Russian government. Well, they had a pro-Russian government. We put in a, this is not Kate, this is me. Yeah, they had a pro-Russian government. Now, then we put in a pro-American government. Now they want to put back a pro-Russian government. Okay, so here he goes. One more sentence here. They want pledges that Ukraine will never join EU or NATO. Well, Gates should know that that's only half true. The pledge is that Ukraine never joined NATO, not the EU. The EU, the Russians have already said, actually, that that'd be okay as long as not NATO. I think we counter all these things. I think we help the Ukrainians counter all these things, keep those Russians at bay, and maybe someday the Russians will decide enough is enough, period, end quote. Okay, what's my point here? Well, in addition to being unreconstructed, person who hates all the Russians and believes the worst of them, and in addition to trying to stoke support for more, like 60 billion more for Ukraine so it doesn't lose to these evil Russians, he's been a windsock, you know. Ever since he left our branch, he's been smelling which way the wind is blowing and dovetailing his sails accordingly. So now there are people in our government like Tony Blinken, like Jacob Sullivan, like Victoria Nuland, and like the president himself, who see Gates as a wise man. Wasn't he a wise man? Yeah, wasn't he? Well, I mean, just to show how wise he was, the way he got his job as Secretary of Defense after having a sinecure as president of Texas A&M, thanks to his good friend George H.W. Bush, he was called to Crawford at the end of 2006. And you need to know this, okay? The war was going really bad in Iraq, so bad that guess who was going wobbly on the war in Iraq? None other than Donald Rumsfeld. He wrote a memo and said, this is not working. We got to do something else. Well, that was going to not going to pass muster with Cheney, who's running things, of course, and Bush. So they said, what do we do? What do we do now to figure out somebody better than Rumsfeld who'll, you know, keep going? And somebody suggested in the grapevine, I'm sure it was one of the Bush people, how about Bobby Gates? He'll do what we tell him. All you have to do is, just make him Secretary of Defense. And so he gets called to Crawford, and George W. Bush says, now, Bobby, or Bob, the war in Iraq is going really bad, as you probably know. And Rumsfeld is chickening out. But we have this incredible general named David Petraeus. He's got 3 stars, spit and polish. His shoes are really polished. He's got a lot of medals here. Going to 4-star pretty soon. He's going to help you out. He's going to help us out in Iraq and get rid of Rumsfeld. He'll retire or go somewhere else. So Gates says, well, yeah, but what are you telling all this to me? Oh, you would be the Secretary of Defense, and Petraeus did the work, and Bobby Gates says, I would be Secretary of Defense? Yeah. Excellent idea. We will surge the troops. Excellent, excellent idea. 20,000, count them, 20,000 more troops surged into Iraq in 2007, the next year. Almost 1,000 of them killed because they went into dangerous neighborhoods to clean them out. A little bit of ethnic cleansing there, okay, Shia, okay? And that was the surge. It was during the surge that collateral murder video appeared where 12 Iraqi civilians minding their own business were gunned down by Apache helicopters, and then a good Samaritan coming to help. One of them was also killed. So that's what the surge was all about. Again, upwards of 900 U.S. servicemen killed in that surge, just in that one period, needlessly, just to keep the Iraq war going, when everyone, including Rumsfeld, but not Bobby Gates, if he could become Secretary of State. So that's the kind of guy you're working with here. Last thing I'll just say is, after surging the troops into Iraq and then being kept on as Secretary of Defense because he's such a wise man, right, by Obama, okay, the first Secretary of Defense to be kept on after a new political party won the election, okay, he was kept on. And what did he do? He and Petraeus said, hey, the surge worked so great in Iraq, let's do it in Afghanistan. Did thousands and thousands more troops. Bottom result, more than 2,400 troops, or whatever it is, killed in Afghanistan. So the last point I just simply make is that after all this, and after being anointed as this very wise man, okay, and the Boston Globe and everybody is singing his praises and say, oh, what a terrible thing is that he's finally going to retire, he gives a speech at West Point to the cadets. And he says, several hundred of your former cadets have been killed in the wars that I have tried to supervise. And I feel badly for each one of them. And I would just say, in parting, I would quote General Douglas MacArthur, who indelicately said, if I'm advising the president, I would say never put substantial U.S. forces in Asia. Oh, what a wise thing. A little bit late. And he retired a couple of months later. So that's the guy, but he's a windsock. So there are other people within the administration saying, yeah, let's try bombing Crimea and let's get rid of that bridge. Other people besides Gates, because Gates doesn't do this kind of thing alone. And then, you know, a day after, we have this conversation between these very high Bundeswehr officials, certified now as authentic, planning how to drop the Crimean bridge. So coincidence there? No. Next, we have Macron saying, you know, should not be ruled out that we put NATO troops in Ukraine. And Putin, of course, read the Riot Act about that, saying, look, you know, I hope you understand that we have nuclear weapons. And if you push us, or if we even dare to threaten our country or to use one of these mini nukes, well, we have them too. Matter of fact, the ones we have are more efficient, much faster. And so don't do it, huh? Don't do it. Now, after all this stuff goes down, we have two really interesting things that I've just kind of thought through this morning. One is that somebody showed the Wall Street Journal a copy of that almost concluded treaty between Ukraine and Russia at the end of March, beginning of April 2022, so 6 months after the war started. And then they didn't publish the text, but they explained exactly what was in there. Neutrality for Ukraine. There would be redistribution of the troops would be limited on both sides. Donetsk and Lugansk would stay in Ukraine and have some autonomy as the Minsk agreements provided. Crimea would be dealt with later. In other words, would stay in the status it is. It was almost signed. And Putin himself said that we have the name of the Ukrainian negotiator who now admits that it was all ready to go. It was initialed, but Boris Johnson came in on behalf of guess who, the US and the UK, and said, no, don't do that. Don't even think of it. Because if you do that, we won't give you any more support. You'll be left at the mercy not only of the Russians, but of the neo-Nazis who you had to include in your government. So you better not, that we'll support you for as long as it takes. Well, now that's changed, of course, to as long as we can. And bottom line, we can't anymore. So good luck. We can't unless we can persuade the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, to give in and to allow the appropriation of those $60 billion. So that was really curious. The Wall Street Journal telling the truth, not publishing the treaty itself, but having been given a real good look at it and publishing what that treaty said, saying to the American people, even the elite American people, hey, we had a deal back there in early April 2022. It was the best deal. We should have done is all but what they're saying. Now, the other interesting thing that happened, I just came across this morning, is that the Army Chief of Staff, his last name is George, Randy George, I think it is. He spoke out in a very unfamiliar way, a very unusual way. And he said, look, you know, we shouldn't underestimate the Russians. You know, the Russians have done pretty well in Ukraine. Others have said the Russians' economy has sparkled despite all those sanctions and stuff. So please, let's not underestimate the Russians and what they can do. And what's that all about? The Army Chief of Staff saying that? And then the Army, was the Secretary of the Army, I forget her name, she said the same thing at the same time. So what are they doing? Well, this is a guess, but I think it's a good one. They're saying, look, see this? We wear a uniform. We know what war is like. You, Blinken, you, Sullivan, you, Nuland, you, Biden, with your five exemptions during Vietnam. You others that never donned a uniform except the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts, okay? You don't know what war is. We do. Let's not underestimate the Russians, particularly since just 2 days ago, Putin made very clear what he's going to do if you escalate to the point of threatening Russia, or worse still, using one of these mini nukes, which, as you know, I've been predicting would be an option that they would broach to Biden And in his current status or his current state of mind, there's no guarantee that he wouldn't approve that. Now, that's important, okay? The Russians like stability, what Putin called predictability, okay, on the part of the U.S. president. And he said some really weird things. I mean, he said to a Russian journalist, look, Biden's been around a long time. He's predictable. The other guy's not. So, yeah, we prefer Biden. For me, I think that's a big mistake for Putin to say anything about the U.S. election. There's no way he can do any good talking about the U.S. election. But that he chooses to do that and to say, look, the cream of the crop, the thing that's most important to us is predictability. And then he's asked just yesterday, what about, the president of the United States called you a crazy son of a bitch. Now, Nima, son of a bitch in Russian, sukin syn, sounds even worse than it does in English, okay? Sumazhechi, that's crazy, right? That means is your mind, okay? You're going out of your mind, okay? So you're going out of mind and you're an SOB. What does Putin say? He's playing us. He says, well, that just reinforces my notion that that Biden is predictable. They're predictably bad. And, as long as we watch them, as long as we're on our toes, and more seriously, as long as we're on full alert for these other guys, well, maybe we can talk in other channels to people like the Army Chief of Staff and say, look, can you talk some sense into these guys? They have no appreciation of what war is like. We have, okay, we lost 26 million more, 26 and more million during World War II. We all have family that perished in that. Look, tell them. As Lavrov, the foreign minister, said just a few weeks ago, United States, don't think that this time the two oceans that have protected you in previous world wars will protect you this time. Now, that is as blunt as you can get. That was the prime diplomat, the Russian foreign minister. So we're at such a pass here. Meanwhile, I just include by saying the Russians are moving rather more quickly than any of us really expected. That Avdiivka that was conquered a week ago, man, that was a stronghold that we thought would probably be hard to take, but they took it. And they have more prisoners now, Ukrainian prisoners that they can handle. So it looks like the real challenge now before our administration is to get the House to pass a $60 billion more aid to Ukraine. What will that do? That will simply prolong the agony. That will give them the wherewithal to get how far? Well, we only need to get to November. What's in November? Well, you remember what's in November? Our elections, okay? It's totally cynical because there's no way that Ukraine can prevail unless, and this is the unpredictable thing, unless Biden is convinced by one of these acolytes that using a little mini nuke, that will show the Russians, that would give us enough space until November. And then we might not lose really clearly then, and we might not lose the election either, because there's a lot run on that election, personal stake in that election as well, because if that other guy comes in, going to be really bad for us.
We had Lloyd Austin saying that if Ukraine falls, NATO is at war with Russia. And you see Emmanuel Macron's so strange recently. He's talking about sending troops, as you mentioned. Since this war started, he was talking about negotiating with Russians, making some common ground with Russians. Is NATO getting to the point that is ready to commit a suicide?
I think that the suicidal tendencies are very apparent. The problem is that these hacks who have ascended to power in the NATO countries don't know which end is up. Some of them are still talking about giving Russia a strategic defeat. The head of Estonia, I think, said, you know, we have no, we won't give these sophisticated weaponry to Ukraine. We have no conditions on that. They can go as far into Russia as they like. You know, it's as though the Russians have to sit back and say, they are still not taking us seriously. Vladimir Vladimirovich, you need to be very specific in what you say during that State of the Nation address. And of course, he was on the 28th, I guess, of February, just a couple days ago. So it was unusual for Putin to be so blunt about it. But this concatenation of events and Macron, Macron is a loose cannon. Let's face that. He was actively opposed in what he said by the Germans and by several other NATO countries. No, we're not going to send any NATO troops into. Are you French going to win there? And worst of all, Macron acknowledged that. They're already UK. No, I'm sorry. Worst of all. There was acknowledgement that there are NATO troops already there. And the way I see it, Nima, Germany is the key here. I don't think the Scholz government is very long-lived here. I think that they're on their way out, and they have to know it. Okay. So what are they going to do here? Are they going to send these Taurus missiles to Ukraine after that conversation indicates that they would be used? I mean, we're not imagining this. It's in the intercepted telephone conversation. I don't know why they used a medium that could be intercepted, but they did. Okay, it's sort of like before the coup, the coup way back in February 2014. When Undersecretary of State Nuland's talking to the U.S. ambassador in Kiev in the open. And of course, it's deceptive, and she's plotting the coup, and it's very obvious what's happened. And that was publicized on YouTube on the 4th of February. When did the overthrow of the Yanukovych government happen? On the 22nd of February. Wow, so 2.5 weeks before it was blown, they went ahead with it anyway, okay? So here we have another conversation that's going to raise a hue and cry in Germany, I hope. Now, when I say I hope, it's that I think I know the Germans, okay? I served there for 5 years. I know a lot about World War II. I was alive during World War II. I wasn't reading much then. I was very little. But, you know, during World War II, the Germans hunted. They couldn't find their voice. When Jews were marched off for genocide, no one could find their voice. Not even the religious authorities, Catholic, Evangelical, Lutheran. And sad to say, the Pope. There was nothing that came out that people could read and understand and say, this is against morality, pure and simple. Genocide is not a good idea. It's evil. We ought to stop it. Nobody spoke out. So what happens now? Well, there was a young lawyer in Berlin in 1933. He was training to be a judge. His name was Raymond Pretzel. He goes by a different pen name now. Became a successful publicist in Germany later. But he was keeping this diary. And as all this stuff went down, he finally commented. He said, you know, there's something lacking in Germans. What's lacking is a kernel of dignity and willingness to stand up to evil. They could have done it. They didn't do it. They preferred to be obedient Germans, and we saw what happened. Hitler didn't have a majority in 1933. I watched this. The Social Democrats caved. The Christian Centrum Party caved. Okay? So that's the history here. So ever since I served in Germany, and that's a long time ago now, what, 1990 I came back, I've been pleading with every German I could speak to, look, stand up on your own 2 feet. We understand that you had to act like a child after World War II. That was understandable, but for God's sake, that was what, almost 80 years ago now, huh? Can't you stand up? And can't you stand up for what's right? So as I see it, the crucible here is in Germany, because now we have these Bundeswehr people actually planning these kinds of things with German missiles about to be given to the Ukrainians. Now, will that go through? Well, if that goes through, then this German lawyer that I referred to back in 1933 will have been proven right. There is a so absent an ethical core within Germans which persuades them to salute smartly, not make any trouble, and keep their mouths shut. I don't know how this one's going to come out, but the release of this conversation will at least raise the question in Germany as to how much longer they want to be vassals of the United States. How much longer they want to put up things like the destruction of those pipelines under the Baltic Sea, depriving them of cheap Russian gas. Is there no end to which they will be so servile? I don't know. I've been predicting that they would grow up soon, but that's been for the last 10 years. I don't know if they'll ever grow up, but now they have a chance to grow up because the German people, it's trite to say some of my best friends are German, but, they are, and they're smart as hell. And most of them, the ones I know, do have courage. So it's not a blanket sort of ethnic thing. It's just that the hacks that they elect, just as in our country, don't seem to have an ounce of ethical thinking. And if the Germans cave this time, well, Putin has made it very clear that his missiles, supersonic missiles, can hit capitals anywhere, like Berlin, Paris, And when he talks about this, and people need to be reminded about this, supersonic or hypersonic missiles. Okay. Now, when I was a boy, Mach, a missile or a plane that could fly at Mach 1, that was the speed of sound. Man, that was a big deal. Then we had Mach 2 and then Mach 3. Well, then we get to sort of hypersonic missiles. Okay. They go at Mach from 6, 7, 8, 9. There's a Mach 10 missile that the Russians have. They've already used them in Ukraine. There is no defense against them, okay? So what am I saying here? I'm saying here that when Putin says, there are certain categories in which we have the advantage now in this old Cold War dilemma, well, he's speaking the truth. He said that it's a while before the U.S. gets hypersonic missiles. They're working on them, but they haven't been able to develop. But the tests have always failed. When they get them, and Putin said this 2 months before the invasion of Ukraine, he said, when the U.S. gets hypersonic missiles, they will put them in Ukraine. Then he extracted a president. He extracted a promise from our president, President Biden, during a telephone conversation on 30th of December, 2021, the readout of that was, Mr. Biden said that the U.S. has no intention of putting offensive strike missiles in Ukraine. Great rejoicing by the Russians. And then when the negotiators for both sides got together in Geneva, the U.S. had no instructions about this promise. In other words, the U.S. reneged on it, and Putin called Biden on that on the 12th of February, 2022, 2 weeks or 12 days before the invasion. And he said, you know, you promised or you undertook not to do this, and now your negotiators won't even talk about it, nor will they talk about preventing Ukraine from joining NATO. That's it, folks. Those are two things we had fully expected you would honor. We'll draw the necessary conclusions. Simultaneously with all that, the shelling of Russian-speaking areas in the eastern Ukraine went up from 500 a day to 1,300 a day, and the invasion that came on the 24th, as you'll remember, just 2 years ago.
We know that CIA Director William Burns went to Kiev recently, and we had the Ukrainian intelligence reporting that there are some attempts to overthrow Zelensky by spring. Do you think this trip is related to these kind of reports that are coming from the Ukrainian intelligence, or something beyond that?
Sending Bill Burns to referee this kind of thing is a huge mistake. The head of the CIA should not be involved in this kind of thing. This is not the first time. We had George Tenet involved in a Tenet plan for the Middle East. That worked out really well, didn't it? And you've had, you had John Brennan, for God's sake. You know, right after the coup in Kiev, Brennan was dispatched to Ukraine. It was April. The coup was in February. He was there in April. And he talked to them and said, look, all right, go wipe those people out there in Donetsk and Lugansk, and we'll give you a lot of arms. And of course, it took them a long time to get trained and armed and all, but they were trained and armed and ready to go there a couple of years later. So Brennan and these CIA directors have an outsized and a very foolish mission if they try to do these things. Even when you talk about the feckless Tony Blinken, you know, if he's so feckless that he can't do these things by himself, well, for God's sake, you get somebody in who is unfeckless, okay, who can do the job. You don't send the CIA director off willy-nilly to Ukraine, to Qatar, to negotiate, and, you know, it's just so unraveling what's happened at the top of the security apparatus. Here's President Biden, 2 days ago, licking a big ice cream cone, okay? And they say, hey, Mr. President, what do you think? Would there be a ceasefire? He says, Friday, yeah. I just talked to my national security advisor. He says Friday, yeah. So let's keep our fingers crossed, Friday. Well, then later, they announced, well, not be Friday, maybe next week. So who's making the mistakes here? Did Jacob Sullivan tell the president it's going to be Friday? Or did Jacob Sullivan say, Mr. President, it's at the earliest it'll be Friday, but, you know, I can't guarantee that. Either way, Biden is showing himself not really competentous. During a recent, I think just yesterday, he's talking about making sure that the aid gets to those poor people that we are enabling genocide against in Gaza. Those poor people, we're going to airdrop some stuff, and we're going to get it right through Ukraine and get it right there, and we have these, you know, we'll try to get to, some trucks through Ukraine, too. Well, he meant Gaza, of course. You know, I'm a pretty old guy, and I get things mixed up sometimes, but I'm not running two wars. I won't ask you to vote for me, you know. I'm getting up there, but I don't get those things mixed up. So what you have is a president that's susceptible to any kind of suggestion, as long as it's America first and America's most powerful country in the world. I told you about that before. And so these people who never wore a military uniform are just happy to take risks and even encourage people like the Germans. Some people in Washington encourage the Germans, take out the Crimean Bridge. And Bobby Gates thinks it's a good idea, and Bobby Gates is a very wise man, you know. Look what he did for the surge in Iraq. Look what he did with Afghanistan, you know, thousands and thousands of. So it's just, you know, incomprehensible. The bottom line, of course, is the American people know very little about this. So when they're told Bobby Gates is a wise man, they think he is. Somebody made him the chancellor of the College of William and Mary. He's got a pretty fancy robe to wear, you know, when he comes to commencement and so forth. So does that make him a wise man? No. The most I could say is that it's possible he really believes that Russia is the center of all evil. You know, when he worked for me, he didn't believe that. He didn't write that when he was covering Soviet foreign policy to the Middle East. He was a pretty good analyst. I don't know where I got this idea, but it folded in very nicely with Mr. Gate, with Mr. Casey, who became director. And Mr. Casey said, he didn't say it this way. He says, Bobby Gates said, do you think that the Russians will ever give up power, the Communist Party? No, never, sir. Okay, you can be head of the analysis directorate, okay? And make sure that everybody works for you, thinks rightly about these things. That's what happened. That's why the CIA analytical division missed the fall of the Soviet Union primary target number one.
Zelensky said that they don't have a plan B. They don't have a backup plan. Who's going to force them to have it after all? It's going to be Biden administration. It's going to be the next guy. Nobody knows who's going to be the next president of the United States. Or it's going to be Russians.
Well, my personal opinion is that Zelensky is not long for this world. Not that they're going to hang him up from a telephone pole, but he'll be going to one of his villas that he has assiduously cultivated outside Ukraine. Now, the prime mover here is affectionately called the Wicked Witch of the West, Victoria Nuland, okay? What happened 3 weeks ago? Well, General Zelensky turned out not to be delusional. And he said, we're losing. We have to figure out how to end this, what he called stalemate. That's a nice way of saying we're losing. It's not a stalemate. They're losing. And Zelensky really reacted strongly to that. And then so Zelensky says, well, you know, you're wrong. And there's this open conflict. And who comes? Victoria Nuland descends into Kiev. Okay. And she referees this thing. And she said, all right, listen, you guys. Zelensky is still our guy. Okay. Zelensky's not our guy. Zelensky, you're going to resign or be removed. We'll give you a couple days, okay? You got to get, you're going soft in this war. Zelensky is our guy, okay? And let's see, who you got to take Zelensky's place? After all, he is head of the armed forces. We have Budanov, that sounds Russian. Well, actually, yeah, he's Russian. His parents live in Russia. Don't want Budanov. Who else you got? Sirsky. Well, that sounds better. Sirsky. We get that belong to Zelensky and Zelensky. Sirsky sounds good. All right. Sirsky, what's your experience? Whoa, I held off at Bakhmut for 8 months. Oh, okay. Well, held off. He sacrificed about 100,000 Ukrainian troops trying to defend Bakhmut, which fell in May of last year. Okay, so that's his claim to fame. So he's in charge of the army. What does he do? He said, oh, now it's Avdiivka, or as the Ukrainians say, Avdiivka, that's under threat. I'll send my crackerjack, yeah, Azov battalion, the neo-Nazi battalion that has the most advanced weaponry. We'll send them to relieve the people who've been trying to defend Avdiivka for a year or so. So he sends them, and he doesn't realize, apparently, that the Russians see everything from the sky. If they don't see it from satellites, they see it from drones. And as soon as those guys got anywhere near Avdiivka, they were obliterated. Now, I have to say, Nima, these are human beings, okay? I take no joy. I can understand that they were obliterated, but I don't think it's a good idea. I don't like it, okay? But they were, okay? So that was Sirsky's first move. Total failure, sacrificing, what, another couple of thousand Ukrainian troops, and there's no reserve. So what I'm saying here is that you got a bunch of clowns head of the army. More and more people are surrendering. You know, when they surrender, it's not like they're talking Korean or Chinese. I mean, they all speak Russian. And they say, look, you know, can we be brothers again? And the Russians treat them, as far as I know, pretty decently, okay? So I see, you know, in the coming months, there's going to be a clear move forward by the Russians. Attrition, attrition, attrition. I think it takes some time. They're not going to go directly to the river, to the Dnieper. But then they'll say, look, we need to negotiate. And if the 80 million, the 80 billion doesn't get through, they'll have to negotiate, okay? If it does get through, then they can prolong this agony, sacrifice some more of the Ukrainian citizens to this misadventure, and get to November and maybe not lose the election to that other guy, okay? That's so damn cynical. I mean, it's playing with people's lives here. I mean, it's bad enough. It's worse what's happening in Gaza, genocide. But it's akin to that here, because everybody knows how this is going to end. Except maybe Biden or Blinken. And that's why Putin is saying to these guys, don't you understand? Can't you understand what's going on here? So let's cross our fingers and kind of rely on a still cautious Putin and entourage. And maybe people like Bobby Gates will not win out this time. Maybe somebody will understand his heritage and where he's come from in Iraq and Afghanistan, all his other misadventures. Maybe people will see through his best friend forever, David Ignatius, who's not only his spokesperson, but the CIA spokesperson at the Washington Post. Maybe people will watch your program. Now, I'll say one more thing, Washington Post. During 2002 and early 2003, the Washington Post op-ed editor, what was his name? Come to me in a second. He ran about 90% articles saying, there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and we have to really get them, okay? So after that was over, he went up to the Columbia School of Journalism, and there was an interview. And they said, Mr. Op-Ed Editor of the Washington Post, why was it that you asserted for those many months from about August, September 2022 until March of 2023, that there were weapons of mass destruction in there, in Ukraine, as flat fact, a term that the journalists use. And the editor said, well, you know, if weapons of mass destruction weren't there in Ukraine, we probably shouldn't have said that they were. So, you know, I mean, so you talk about journalism, right? Now, what happened to that guy? Fred Hyatt, as the name finally comes back to me, there's sort of some resistance to his name, okay? Fred Hyatt. So he was cashiered for cause, right? You don't write things that aren't so. Oh, no, no, he stayed in place for 20 more years. Count them, 20 more years. Now, why do I adjust? Well, I had a little comment from Bob Perry, my mentor in journalism. Robert Perry, wonderful, since deceased, wonderful investigative journalist. He was with me when we were in the city. He said, Ray, you know, what he just said about you're not supposed to say something if it isn't so. Well, I thought that that was one of the, I thought that was one of the cardinal principles of journalism. Oh, yeah. Okay. So the point here is, 20 years he stayed in place. The guy that got there is, I don't know, not much better. That's what you do. The problem is no one was held accountable, not for the publicizing of this stuff, not for the creation of these myths, and there's still myths being created. So as long as nobody's held accountable, people have to rely on you and me. And maybe we'll reach enough people so that they'll tell their friends, hey, you know, we've been misled seriously by the New York Times and all these other places, Washington Post. And so let's see if we can figure out what should be done now. And let's put pressure on our House Congress, our congressmen, not to throw good money after bad in this coming week. To face up to the problem and lean on them real hard, saying, look, we know what this is all about. The Democrats want to win the election. They know they can't if Ukraine suffers a blatant defeat. All they want to do is keep this going through November.
Joe Biden said that we're going to have a ceasefire. And right after that, Netanyahu said, no, that's not possible. With the current situation in Gaza, in your opinion, where are we going?
Well, as far as Washington's behavior is concerned, as you know, Nima, we just registered our fifth veto in the United Nations. That particular one had to do with the Israelis firing on relief trucks and stuff that just had come into Gaza. The Gazans, many of them close to expiring from famine. You know, they ran up to them and they were obliterated. More than 100 killed, people seeing 1,000 casualties. Talk about cynical, huh? They open the gates, they let the trucks in, and then the people come to get the food and they obliterate them. I'm all low. So the U.S. was the sole veto on that. And again, another black eye at the U.S. But as long as this, I'd say hardened arteries are what Biden has, and acolyte that won't tell him the truth if they themselves are able to come at the truth about this. And Bibi Netanyahu, let's face it, here's a spectacle where I'm told 1,000 relief trucks are lined up to get into Gaza and the Israeli won't let them in, okay? So what does Biden do? Instead of getting on the phone and says, Netanyahu, let those damn trucks in. He says, oh, I know what we can do. We can airdrop them in. We'll get, like, maybe the Jordanians will help us. We'll drop these big, big packages of food. And Monsanto and all these people that make the food, they'll profit along with the merchants of arms. A great deal for everybody. That's what we do. Now, how cynical is that? How unnecessary is that? So I go back to 2001. When Netanyahu was in the home of a constituent, okay? And it was a very homey sort of thing. And there was one of the family was doing a video and Netanyahu said, turn that thing off. And he either didn't turn it off deliberately or he forgot to, okay? But we have him saying, look, and this is a quote, okay? Americans, they are easily moved in the right direction. 80% of the Americans approve of whatever we do. That's absurd. His word. That's absurd. Now, It's no longer 80% of Americans, but it is 80% of our Congress, for God's sake. And that has to do with money, and it has to be do with the need to be reelected and not to let the Israel lobby dislodge you by backing another candidate. They're even involved in the primaries now. So it's a forlorn hope that Biden will change his mind, the more so since you've got the Israelis pretty much 80% support in the Congress. Somebody said today that reminded me of the comment somebody made several years ago about, we really ought to, Israel is threatened by all these terrible people. We ought to make it the 51st state. And the objection to that, of course, was, no, bad idea. Why? Because then it would only have two senators. That's a joke, all right? But it's not funny. It's not a funny joke. Then they'd only have two senators. Now they have a distinct majority, all the senators. So, Nemo, the big thing right now is what's going to happen Monday, Tuesday. The House will reconvene. The head of the House, the Speaker, Mike Johnson, is under incredible pressure to give in and supply more, $80 billion more to Ukraine. Will he do it? The odds are most people think that Speaker Johnson will not be able to resist this pressure. Maybe it's a hope father to the thought here, but still, I do think he'll be able to resist it. We should know within the next week or 10 days, and that will be big. That will be very big, because the Russians are on the move, and there's no way that this administration can disguise a blatant defeat in Ukraine unless they're allowed with more and more money to prolong this agony until November.